Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Well, we've been looking forward to coming back to Huntsville since we were here last June. So it's been a few months, but our welcome was so great. When we came, we got to go to dinner with someone, and she had a whole bunch of people over to her house, and wow, did we have a good time. So we're delighted to be back here. It's good to see. I think I know just about everybody. I recognize all your faces. So it looks sort of like a Camp Tomahawk reunion in some ways. But it's good to be here today. So I heard some themes in the sermonette today by Mr. Davenport. Cleave to God, children of light. Why, that just matches perfectly with what I've got to speak about today. Because the title today is Children of the Most High. Lately, I've been reading through the book of Matthew. One of my goals this year is to try to cover the four Gospels before the spring holidays. And who knows how many days before Passover? Anybody know? Anybody got that down yet? 72 days. 72 days to get ready for the Passover, to put the leavening out of our houses. Not very much time, really, if you think about it. Just a little over 2 months to go. And we start over again. Last week I heard an interesting sermon which dovetails in with this topic. The gentleman giving the sermon talked about how a lot of people in the world want to know about Jesus and who Jesus was, the kind of person that Jesus was, but a lot of people don't care to know what he taught. And so that kind of solidified this today, because I wanted to cover some things that Jesus actually taught. It's kind of hard to get through Matthew and not see a whole bunch of what Jesus taught, especially in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, which is where I'll be spending quite a bit of time today. Harry Truman said, "I do not believe there's a problem in this country or the world today which could not be settled if approached through the teaching of the Sermon on the Mount." So maybe we should just not have a sermon for us today, and we'll all sit and take an hour and write a nice personal letter to President Trump and say, if you really want true wisdom, go ahead and read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. I have a funny feeling that Mr. Trump may have been exposed to that at some point in his life, but I don't think he's really studied hard what Jesus taught. Based on some quotations from the Bible that I've heard him say, I don't think he's really a student yet, but he could be. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Sr., said, "Most people are willing to take the Sermon on the Mount as a flag to sail under, but few will use it as a rudder by which to steer." So I would like to go to the end of the story first and set the stage for what we're all truly aiming at here. And as we matriculate through Matthew 5, 6, and 7 today, I'm going to concentrate on a few passages, not all of it, but we're going to see that Jesus is teaching us the state of the people that will be told, "Well done, good and faithful servant." So I want you to imagine for a couple minutes. You can close your eyes if you want to. You don't have to, but you can if you want to. Imagine that you are hearing from Jesus Christ himself, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Well done. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." All of your worries are over at that point. You made it. You're hearing those words from Jesus. You have a glorious Iron Man-like spiritual body. A body that is what Ethan Pisoni back in the back dreams about. He wants that Iron Man body. And I bet he works out every day towards that end. Imagine you've just heard those words. You look around. You see your parents. You see your spouse. You see your kids there. You see your longtime friends there. You just heard the words you've been wanting to hear ever since God gave you the truth. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 2, 9 says, "But as it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. Construction is underway. Construction's underway in this room right now. It's occurring in God's people right now. Those who really will hear those words. The people who will hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant," are doing something now, and they're preparing even today. The Sermon on the Mount is filled with encouragement, even admonition, to become just like Jesus, to become like children of our Father in heaven. And those ending words that we hear are truly worthy of our undivided attention and outright pursuit. Becoming like our Father in heaven means going through a transformative change in the way that we think. And just like we heard about in the sermonette today, it doesn't come naturally to us as physical human beings. Matthew 7, beginning in verse 13. Matthew 7, beginning in verse 13. Well, this is a Camp Tomahawk theme from years past. Matthew 7, beginning in 13 says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." Verse 16, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You'll know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them." Verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." That's the kind of person who's going to be hearing those words at the end. "Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" And if that's not one of the most frightening phrases anyone could possibly hear on that day, is "I never knew you." Frightful. So Matthew 5, 6, and 7 talks about attitudes that will get us to the point where we're not going to hear those words. We'll hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Verse 24, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." And so it was, when Jesus had ended these things, that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. So becoming children of our Father in heaven and perfect as he is perfect requires intentional effort, since we are, after all, physical human beings. But it's possible. And it requires our careful study and intentionality. So today I'll be spending some time in the Sermon on the Mount and looking specifically at how we're to respond to evil when we see it, why, and the result, which is that you may be children of your Father in heaven. So what an opportunity as Christians. We're faced with evil every day. I face evil many times during the day. I work out in the world. I think we probably all do, right? So we face evil. We see it all around us every day. What an opportunity as Christians, since we're surrounded by it. And you don't have to look very far, in case you haven't seen evil lately. Why, you only have to look out as far as CNN.com. If you want good, fresh news, to brighten up your day, go to CNN.com. As of yesterday afternoon, here were the top stories on CNN.com. Florida teens arrested in school shooting plot. Israel, this kind of surprised me. Israel looks to decriminalize marijuana. Trump calls Madonna disgusting. The future of fashion. Oh, I love this one. I'd really fight myself not to read this story. The future of fashion, clothes like drops of water. Maybe you'd get covered up if it was clothes like drops of Mississippi River water. But, and town apologizes for a forgotten lynching. Some of those were top five news stories on CNN.com. Just evil. Evil. The temptation to look at clothes made of water. Why, that would get a guy in trouble, now wouldn't it? Get any of us in trouble if we spend time on that. Or, unless we have any questions about how much evil there is in the world, take a spin through the television. One of the most popular shows on Monday nights right now is what? It starts at 7 and it goes to about 9. Anybody know? The Bachelor. Oh my! So I spent some time watching The Bachelor, I'm sorry to say, a few weeks ago, just because I was a little bit curious. See, I like to see the girl, all the 40 girls come in to see the guy. I think that's kind of neat. I like to see the guy's face. I like to see all those girls come in their pretty dresses, trying to get that guy's attention. But you just can't do that without knowing that there's horrendous levels of evil in the world. I took a break for a few weeks from it, and my wife was sitting in the living room, and we didn't have anything to do that night, so we were going around, you know, watching something, looking for something to watch. I said, "Oh, Sherry, it's the last 15 minutes of The Bachelor. We got to see all the rejection." And she said, "Michael, you're a Christian. Don't you dare. Don't you dare." And so I went, we have dish television with 900 and something channels. So I went all the way from channel 1 all the way up to 900, 9900 or whatever it was. There wasn't a thing on TV except The Bachelor. So guess what I did? I watched a minute and a half of The Bachelor, because the minute and a half that I saw on that show was absolutely repugnant. It was hideous. It was evil. Things came into my mind that should not have entered my mind in that 90 seconds. This is just the theme of the world that we all find ourselves in. Jesus faced evil like that down in a peaceful, non-threatening way when he was here. The way he faced the Pharisees and the scribes, the way he faced his own death. You know, maybe you like to watch The Passion before the Passover. I do. Chuck Smith does. He likes to watch it. He says it's good for his attitude. I try to. Sherry won't watch it. It's too violent. She just can't. She won't. I do, though. About once a year, I watch The Passion. And I'm always amazed by how little Jesus Christ said when he was being lied about, hit, spit on, crucified. But what about the hitting and the lying? That court scene? What a great example he set for us to take that evil when it's going to be our time to take that evil. The primary text for today, Matthew 5, 38 through 42. So I'd like to go ahead and turn over there to Matthew 5 and begin in verse 38. While we're turning there, and I meant to tell you this before I started the sermon, it's completely unrelated, but I started it. So last time I was here, I told you that Marissa was having real issues with her eyes. And I know most of you have probably been following her story. Well, she's gone up and down with her eyes, but she had an appointment on Thursday, and instead of having two shots in her eyes, she had to have one. Well, guess what else is very encouraging to us? 20/20 vision in both eyes, which I thought you would find very encouraging. We're very encouraged by that. So her eyes seem to be on the mend, and we see maybe in a couple months she won't have to have shots, or at least as often. So that's what we're looking forward to. The poor girl still has a back as crooked as a question mark, as you can imagine, as we hear on Forrest Gump. She has a back that just bothers her all the time. So If you would mind keeping her in your prayers on that. She's not here today because she's been struggling with a cold, or else she would be here. She wanted to be here. One good thing is boys from all over the nation love Marissa and they're calling. I mean, she can't even talk. She couldn't talk last night because her throat's bothering her from this illness. And one fellow from Florida who's just enamored with Marissa wanted to talk. And she wouldn't take the call because she couldn't talk. Matthew 5, verse 38 says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." So when someone treats us wrongly, how do we respond? How should we, as Christ followers, aspiring to be children of our Father? Do we react in kind with evil? Do we stand there and take whatever abuse is given? Well, what's the proper way to respond to that? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus taught concerning the righteousness of the kingdom. He did so by contrasting it with the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Jesus contrasts this righteousness in such matters as murder and anger, adultery, divorce, swearing oaths, and others. So I'd like to go to Matthew 5 and look at some of this teaching. Matthew 5, beginning in verse 21. We're going to cover some material on those four topics, how he addressed it. Matthew 5, beginning in verse 21, says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old." You know, isn't that interesting? That'd be a great study in itself. Every time Jesus says, "You heard this," and then he finishes off by saying what? "But I say to you this. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. And whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, kind of an interesting word, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. So, wow, isn't that interesting? Isn't that something that says, oh, we might ought to be careful about saying, oh, you fool. You know, even Job didn't go that far when he was talking to his wife. He said, you speak as the foolish women. He didn't make that mistake of calling her a fool because he knew how bad that was, how God viewed that. That word raca is kind of an interesting story too. Raca is an Aramaic transliteration for rika, a term expressing contempt, scorn, or disdain. The Greek word raca means empty, vain, or worthless one, signifying a lack of intellect. It's only found in Matthew 5:22, where we just read. The Jews use it as a word of contempt. It's derived from a root meaning to spit. So that's a word that Jesus hates. He created everyone. He's the creator. For any of his creation to look at another of his creation and say raca must be very offensive to him. Verse 23, concentrating on sort of the heart, the down of the nitty gritty heart issues here. 23, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you." You know, I kind of think about this at Passover. Sometimes it's a little frightening to hear these words echoing at us during Passover. I kind of look around the room sometimes and during Passover and say, oh, somebody has something against me. Oh, do I have something against someone else? Because maybe I shouldn't be here without resolving that first. I think that every year at Passover. It's a worthy question to ask. It's worthy preparation before the Passover this year. 24, "Leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you're on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge. The judge hands you over to the officer, and you're thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you'll by no means get out of there until you've paid the very last penny. On adultery, verse 27. You've heard it that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So here it's really clear that Jesus Christ is raising the bar from the old law. He's raising it up a notch, a big, tall, long, faraway notch. So how does that present itself each and every day to us? If it doesn't present itself via online ads on the internet, the TV that we've already talked about, the radio, what comes on the radio is something to behold too, isn't it? So what are we listening to on the radio? The prince of the power of the air is in full swing, no doubt about it. And Jesus is saying that when he's raising this bar. Verse 29, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish and for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you, for it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. On marriage, verse 31, furthermore, it's been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. So these are the words that we take to the bank, brethren. These are words that we live by. We love these words. I encourage everyone to read Matthew 5, 6, and 7 in its entirety today when you get home. What about tomorrow morning? Read those words. It'll change your day. It will change your outlook. By the way, I did it this week. I read Matthew 5, 6, and 7 one day on my lunch break. 30 minutes is all it takes. And that's not a fast read. That's a take your time and consider those words. And it's not doing it on the computer, not doing it by listening or whatever. It's literally opening up that word to those pages and reading those words. It'll change you. It'll make your day better. Start it out that way. Verse 33, concerning oaths. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it's his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great King. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. So summarizing this so far, becoming like our Father in heaven means going the extra mile in our view of righteousness. And that means studying what God views as righteousness and not what we think righteousness is. For the remainder today, I'd like to focus on only a small piece of this sermon. How we are to respond to evil when we see it. What did Jesus teach us about our response to evil? Think back, again, imagine. We have a spokesman's club in Nashville now. We meet twice a month, and Gary Petty is the director of our spokesman's club. Aren't we blessed? Right? We have 12 or 14 or 15 guys, started out with about 27. Boiled on down to 12 or 13 or 14 now. But boy, these guys are serious about matriculating through Spokesman's Club. Young guys, all the way through old guys. And I'm loving it. But he said, Gary said the most important or the most powerful word in the English language last week at Spokesman's Club is imagine. So I'd like for you to imagine the last time someone was evil to you. Someone was evil to you. It's easy for me because I work amongst lots of heathens all week long, people who don't have God's Spirit. of the 100 people or so in the office where I work, I would say there's maybe 8 or 10 people who may have been brushed lightly with the Holy Spirit. But they don't have it living in them. They don't have it ruling their actions during the day. So I get to deal with lots of evil almost every day. Selfish things. Selfish, greedy people who only want what they want for themselves. It's real easy for me to get to this imagination here. Thursday or the Thursday before that. Seems like Thursdays are really bad for me at work these days. Not sure why. But something bad happened at work. And I'm an accountant, and we were putting together a bunch of information for taxes, and the system blew up, and it was my fault. It was my fault all the way around. And it was 4:30 in the afternoon, when people are typically filing out of the office at about 4:32, 4:35, and the last holdout gone at about 4:57, something like that. You know, well before 5 anyway. Well, it was my fault, and oh, did I see evil? Because we were faced with one deadline like you wouldn't believe. And my boss came on down and yelled at me in the office, yelled at me in front of everybody too, and said mean things to me because the system blew up. It was my fault. So guess what we did? We all stayed until 8:30. And we busted up a big project into about 6 pieces and parts, and we got done. But, oh, was everybody mad at me. Good thing. I've been focusing on Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And I had to take a lot of humility during that. And I took the whole blame for it, too, because it really wasn't all my fault. Mostly my fault, not all my fault. But I took all of it. Jesus gave 2 principles on how we should respond to evil. He says, do not resist an evil person. Not only should we not take vengeance into our own hands, but not even oppose the evil person when the evil is being done. And I have a feeling, since I've been studying into this, I didn't know I was guilty of this a couple of weeks ago, but now I know that I am pretty guilty of this resistance issue. My wife probably has known a long time that I'm guilty of this resistance issue. I have a feeling, though, that I've failed miserably over this over the years. And I don't mind telling on myself. I actually left a job about 16 months ago, right before the Feast of Tabernacles a couple years ago. Good job. Really good job over at St. Thomas Medical Partners in Nashville, Tennessee. Because my boss was giving me heat and grief about going to the Feast of Tabernacles because it went right through month-end close, which is holy time to the Catholic Church. I mean, to St. Thomas Medical Partners, which is run by the Catholic Church. So I knew this was coming up for over a year. This was going to be because I know what time the feast is. And about 3 days before the feast, we'd been simmering over this for way over a year. I went to him and I said, I'm going to have to leave. Going to have to leave my job because I will be going to the Feast of Tabernacles and you told me that I can't go. So I resisted him. Should I have really stayed at that job? Should I have stayed at that job and went to the feast and then faced him when I got back? Maybe. Possibly. I would have had to go through some persecution. But maybe God was a little disappointed that I just went and quit before going through that persecution. Maybe, because I resisted. Maybe he wanted to see, maybe he wanted someone to be there to be a good example to the Catholic Church. But I quit. I quit my job. And you know what happened? As soon as I got back home, that phone started to ring, and I was right back in the saddle again. I didn't even have time to take a little bit of time to paint my upper room. I bought the paint, everything, and that phone started to ring, and I went straight back to work, and I still haven't painted that room. It's been about 16 months. But I'm wondering, because Jesus says, don't resist an evil person. So maybe that'll be an interesting conversation topic for after services today. Was I right to stand in there and quit that job and know that I would be taken care of later, or was I wrong? I'm not sure. Maybe someone can convince me one way or the other after services. He also says, respond to evil by doing good. He says, turn the other cheek. Back to the outline. Responding to a civil suit by giving more than what the person is suing. Responding to government oppression by offering to do more than what's demanded of you. Responding to those asking for help by giving them what they ask. In each case, the principle is the same. We're not to resist the person who would mistreat us or who would deprive us of our possessions. Instead, we're to demonstrate love towards them. Is this to be taken literally? Several Old Testament examples, but there's Joseph, who forgave his brothers in Genesis 45. David, remember the story of David in the perfect position to kill Saul in the cave? And yet he didn't. He spared the Lord's anointed. Elisha in feeding the army of the Arameans in 2 Kings 6. So let's take a look at one of those. In Genesis 45, beginning in verse 4. Genesis 45, beginning in verse 4. And Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. Now this is way into the story of Joseph, because his brothers sold him into slavery. But he says, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. We have several New Testament examples as well. So this is all through the Word. 1 Peter 2, beginning in verse 20. For what credit is it if, when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? You know, we do something, we deserve it, we speed, we get a ticket. What credit is that? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. So there's the ultimate example that we've talked about already. A second example was Stephen. In Acts 7:51, we see how Stephen portrayed this principle. Acts 7, beginning in verse 51. Listen to this sermon. Somebody told me earlier today really, really wanted to get nailed hard between the eyes. Well, here you go. I'll just go ahead and say that this is you who you were who said that. You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears. You always resist the Holy Spirit as your fathers did, so do you. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? And they killed those who foretold the coming of the Just One, of whom you know became the betrayers and murderers, who have received the law by the direction of angels and have not kept it. When they heard these things, they were cut to the heart, and they gnashed at him with their teeth. What a sermon they got to hear from Stephen. You know, no wonder they wanted to kill him, right? But he, being full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God and said, look, I see the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. Then they cried out with a loud voice, stopped their ears and ran at him with one accord. And they cast him out of the city and stoned him. And the witnesses laid down their clothes at the feet of a young man named Saul. And they stoned Stephen as he was calling on God and saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. Then he knelt down and cried out with a loud voice, Lord, do not charge them with this sin. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. What an example. Will we face that example? Will we face that someday? We may. We have the clear teaching of Paul in Romans 12. Romans 12, verses 19 through 21 says, everyone here is going to be relieved when they hear this. Something you're not going to have to do. It says, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil. I don't know why I get dropped into work situations where the people that I work for are evil. I don't know. But I'm in one of those right now. I'm in a work situation where my boss is pretty evil, pretty selfish. And yet, when I see his name come up on my phone, I think, oh my, what's it going to be this time? What's it going to be? What pain? What stretching rack am I going to have to go onto now to endure in the next 2 hours? Because sometimes, you know what he'll do is he'll say, I don't understand this. I don't get this. This doesn't make sense. That's his first thing. This doesn't make sense. And it's something I've worked on for 2 or 3 days. And if you would, it's one of those things where if you just read it, it will make sense. But you have to take a little bit of time and try to understand because it's complex. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. See, you may think I'm really nutty about this, but I decided to view my boss as if he is Jesus Christ himself. And you know what? It completely changed my attitude towards him. Because now, when I'm smart enough to remember this, I don't always, but when I do that, I look at my boss and I think, you are created in the very image of God. You're a man. Of course you're selfish. Aren't we all? Aren't we all greedy, really? Aren't we all out for number one, really? Why should I hold him accountable? He doesn't know God's word. But he's made in God's image. And now that I view my boss like Jesus Christ, I look at him, I think, what can you teach me? And I even say things like, when it's time to go, thank you for spending the time showing me the confusing parts of the work I put together. And I know that must just heap coals, burning coals, all over his head. He doesn't know where in the world I'm coming from. Doesn't know. But he smiles. He doesn't bug me as much. So it works. This really does work. So the teachings of Jesus in this passage are admittedly challenging. It's opposed to natural human nature that we're all pulled towards. But we're called to be partakers of the divine nature. In other words, be more like God than men. So summarizing the teachings of Jesus concerning responding to evil, we're not to resist evil people. We are to respond by doing good in return. We may never face the same situations that Jesus Christ faced, but the principles are the same and can be applied to all of the issues that we face daily. In our response to evil, how are we to treat our enemies? This level of response that Jesus prescribes for us calls us to love our enemies, not hate our enemies. Jesus never hated his enemies. Rather, show active goodwill towards them and bless them rather than curse them. Speak kindly to them. Do good to those that hate us. And pray for those who spitefully use us and persecute us. And the main reason to respond to evil in that way is that we might fulfill that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. So I'm going to go back to Matthew 5 and read this again. Matthew 5, 43 through 48. Says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect." Well, that's a tall order, but it's how we practice being His children. He is even, unbelievably, even kind to the unthankful and the evil. He's kind to them. Luke 6, 35 and 36. We're all aspiring to be God's children. "But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." I know we all want to be sons of our Father in heaven, and perfect, just as He is perfect. The best way to ensure that we're on that narrow path is to be, every day, be washed by that word. Then we will be equipped to act, react, and be like Jesus. And hear those words in the end. "Welcome, children of the Most High, good and faithful servants, enter into the joy of your Lord."